You're just in time for the Bible Answer Man broadcast with Hank Hanegraaff, the radio outreach of the Christian Research Institute. Our purpose here at CRI is to equip Christians to pursue sound doctrine, to discern truth and error, and to become faithful disciples of Christ, because life and truth matter. This is a live program, and we invite your calls. So dial toll-free 888-ASK-HANK. Numerically, that's 888-275-4265. Now, here's the president of the Christian Research Institute, Hank Hanegraaff.
Thank you very much, Randy. And do remember that our focus on same-sex marriage ends in terms of a direct focus. We'll be talking about it from time to time, but it ends in just 2 days, today and tomorrow. The resources available, Same-Sex Marriage, A Thoughtful Approach to God's Design for Marriage by Sean McDowell and John Stonestreet, as well as a special edition of the Christian Research Journal available for your gift. Obviously, these kinds of resources do not, well, ring the cash register. We are this month about $100,000 below budget, and that is to be expected. But truth matters. Life matters. We do what we do, not be politically correct or popular, or even to make the cash register ring. We do what we do because it really does make a difference. And I was sort of thinking about the difference it makes to use the platform that you have while you have it. As I read, ironically, an article in USA Today this morning. The article features this absolutely gorgeous picture of St. Matthew's Monastery. It's a 1,600-year-old monastery. It's absolutely gorgeous. The silence within the monastery as yet peaceful. It's situated on Iraq's Nineveh Plains. St. Matthew's is recognized as one of the oldest Christian structures in Iraq. But think about this, the proximity of the Islamic State to St. Matthew's means that the monastery is now at risk. One of the students fears, what is going to happen as the Islamic State inches ever closer? We know we are on the front lines, and in seconds, the Islamic State could be here. The Islamic State does not understand what history means. They just understand the breaking of history. So here we have a monastery in its heyday boasting 7,000. But just like the Christian population in Iraq, the number has now dwindled dramatically because of the extremist groups. They have systematically targeted Christians over the past century, and the Islamic State is only a continuation of that long history. Despite holding Fort Abraham, one of the chief people there, he's maybe considered the head monk, he says that eventually they're going to have to leave their history behind them. But only will he consider fleeing himself when all the sheep have gone, because the shepherd cannot leave his sheep. St. Matthew, the actual St. Matthew, from where derives the gospel, ended up here, at least in his bones, because he was fleeing persecution as well. But persecution follows Christianity. You can't run from it. You have to stand in front of history. Again, a very significant article in today's USA Today. And I was thinking about where that leaves us. We today stand in America in the shadow of the Bible. We benefit from its blessings, but we are blithely unaware of its source. Today we have more Bibles than at any other time in human history, and yet so many unaware that it has shaped our culture. We're still benefiting, but we don't know why. And so we are on the cusp of a civilization that, like Iraq, is either poised for ruin or perhaps revival. And you listening to me, not pagans, but you Christians listening to me right now, are the deciding factor. Pagans are going to exercise their job description. They're going to be pagan. The question is, are you exercising your job description, that of being an ambassador for Jesus Christ? We are therefore Christ's ambassadors, says Paul, as though God is making his appeal through us. Truth is, most of us have failed in our ambassadorial commission. We remain secret agents who have never blown our cover within a lost and dying empire. Our challenge is to build a lighthouse in the midst of the gathering darkness, to be agents of change rather than microcosms of the culture, to be transformed by the renewing of our minds rather than conformed to the culture. Fair, when it comes to the redefinition of marriage, we are capitulating all too quickly. And we do so to the hurt of those who are least amongst us. Sometimes it is just the little children. Because make no mistake, they are in the crosshairs. And few seem to recognize how tragic the situation really is. Again, same-sex marriage, a thoughtful approach to God's design for marriage. The book and the special edition of the Christian Research Journal, you can find them on the web for your gift, equip.org. You can write me, headbox 8500, Charlotte, North Carolina, zip code 28271. And as always, resource consultants are standing by, 888-7000 and the letters CRI. We'll be going right to your calls. The number to dial to get your question answered live on air today, as mentioned previously, 888-ASK-HANK. Numerically, 888-275-4265. First up is TJ, listening in Kansas City, Missouri, Bot Radio. Hi, TJ.
Hey, how you doing today?
Doing well, thank you.
Sorry you can hardly hear me. Not on the book, but I stepped out so I can talk to you for a second. Hey, I got a question for you. They put me at a question that said, is there any other book or historical information that reflects Jesus' existence besides the Bible, that if you find something outside the Bible where it doesn't reflect, and go back to the Bible to reference?
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's all kinds of external evidence. Internal evidence is sufficient to establish that the biblical manuscripts are authentic, reliable, but external evidence provides remarkable attestation. For example, from external witnesses, you can piece together highlights of the life and death of Christ completely apart from the Bible. I suppose the quintessential example is Josephus. He was born in AD 37, so not long after Jesus was crucified. And he was an eyewitness to many of the details and descriptions that are found in the New Testament. And in Antiquities, he mentions not only James, the brother of Jesus, but mentions Jesus himself. The same is true with Tacitus. Cornelius Tacitus was born about 12 years after the death of Jesus Christ. He was, of course, a contemporary of Flavius Josephus. He's widely deemed the greatest first century historian of the ancient Roman Empire. And in his annals, he talks about Jesus Christ. He provides testimony to the biblical account of Christ's crucifixion at the hands of Pontius Pilate. and points out that this was during the reign of Tiberius Caesar, and draws attention to the Christian movement that spread after the death of Jesus Christ from Judea to Rome. I think about Suetonius. He was also a contemporary of Tacitus and therefore Flavius Josephus. He was the chief secretary to Hadrian. And, of course, best known for the 12 Caesars. At one time, a few years ago, I went to the bookstore and got a CD of the 12 Caesars and listened to it. But like Tacitus, Suetonius makes reference to the mischievous religious belief of Christian devotees who were willing to suffer punishment for the sake of Christ, or what he called Christus. And many other external examples can be given. I give a whole list of them and how they referenced Jesus Christ in my book, Has God Spoken?
Okay. Can I get that book? Can I email it or send me something right away than now?
Yeah, if you can get to the web, equip.org, or else just write me at Box 8500, Charlotte, North Carolina, zip code 28271. And since you have a phone, you can talk to one of our resource consultants, 888-7000 and the letter CRI.
Okay, then. I'll go to your website. Maybe pick up your book, you say 12 Caesars?
Well, no, the book is called Has God Spoken? But in that book, I talk about all of these credible external references to Jesus Christ. So you can piece together highlights of the life of Christ completely apart from Scripture.
Wow, that's what I need. That's what I need. So I need to go there and get the book that says, Has God Spoken?
Yes, exactly.
I appreciate it. I got a chance to meet you on September the 25th in Kansas City.
Well, I'm glad to...
Radio Network.
Well,
I really appreciate you.
I remember being there as well. So God bless you, and thanks for calling, TJ.
Thank you again, sir.
Let's go back to the phone lines. We'll talk to Orlando, listening in Palm Coast, Florida, listening on the web. Hi, Orlando.
How you doing, Hank? Thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I've been listening to your podcast and over and over, and I got a question. I'm going to try to do this as fast as possible. And the notion that a lot of churches teach that when you die, you go to heaven. And I've been reading into the Bible, and for me that doesn't make any sense, because if I go to heavens, then what happened to my judgment day? Then if I get returned back to earth, I don't want to go back to earth when heavens is better. Now, what I have done is go to different churches and listen to what they study, and for me, I believe that Jehovah Witnesses got the right chronological events that the Bible talks about. That you first die, you go to like a stage of comatose, that you don't know what's going on. Grand Tribulation happens, Armageddon happens, then you get resurrected, you get judged, and of course, the purpose of God to create mankind was to live in earth, not in heavens. I understand there's 144,000 people that are selected to live in heavens. It's clear in the Bible. So where this notion comes that we die, we go to heaven, and then we come back, we get judged. And what about if you get judged and you get sent to destruction? You don't want to do that. That's not a fair God.
Well, let me answer your question, Orlando, because you're raising a lot of issues. They're important issues, but let me say the Jehovah's Witnesses do not have it right. They have it dead wrong. If the Bible is the infallible repository for redemptive revelation, if it is a reliable, objective resource to which we can turn, the Bible very clearly points out that when you die, you're absent the body, but you're present with the Lord. And there are many different examples that could be given. The most easily understood, Luke chapter 16, a rich man dies, Lazarus dies. Both of their bodies are buried, but Lazarus is in the presence of God being comforted. The rich man is in torment. Now, that is only an intermediate place, because when Jesus appears a second time, then the veil between the habitation of God and the habitation of humanity will be removed. Sacred space will fill our place. And what Scripture teaches is that God Himself will come and live with us. In other words, it will be very much like it was when Adam and Eve walked with God in the cool of the day. And the notion that there are only 144,000 tickets for heaven and they're all sold and everybody else gets to live on earth is simply nonsense. There's no biblical warrant for it whatsoever. The fact is, we will all in Christ be with Him in a renewed heaven and a renewed earth where indwells righteousness, and God does not rub out the crowning jewels of His creation. He continues to sustain them existence, but apart from His glory and grace.
There is something about the wilderness, wild animals, and even our gardens and pets that humans intuitively find gratifying. Clearly, deep within the human soul, something beckons us to nature. But why? And how can we use this yearning as a point of contact with unbelievers? Find out in the latest issue of the Christian Research Journal. Start your subscription today by calling 888-7000-CRI. That's 888-7000-CRI. Or subscribe online at equip.org. Don't go away. Hank Hanegraaff will return shortly. In The Atheist's Guide to Reality, Enjoying Life Without Illusions, Duke University professor and New Atheist philosopher Alex Rosenberg bites the bullet and declares that to be a consistent atheist, you'll have to be comfortable with a certain amount of nihilism and, just in case, there's always Prozac. Because a growing multitude of college students are drinking deeply from this nihilistic nonsense, we shouldn't be surprised that so many of our national spiritual and cultural indicators are headed south. Graham Veal's concise book, New Atheism, A Survival Guide, is an accessible, practical resource for responding to the nihilistic nonsense of New Atheist. To receive your copy of New Atheism, simply call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support CRI's mind-changing and life-transforming outreaches. Or visit equip.org. The Christian Research Journal is CRI's award-winning magazine, combining eye-catching design with well-researched articles to equip believers in doctrine, defense, and discernment. Here's what's in the latest issue of the Christian Research Journal. Recent atheist writers claim to find real physical and psychological harm in Christian teachings and practices. However, careful analysis of this literature reveals numerous flaws, false assumptions, and factual errors. The real question is whether it is the Christian life or the atheist life that best corresponds to reality and provides for genuine human flourishing. Other topics include the seven deadly sins and the path to virtuous character, does the Levitical prohibition of homosexuality still apply today, and much more. Start your subscription to the Christian Research Journal today by calling 888-7000-CRI or subscribe online at equip.org. The fast-growing acceptance of same-sex marriage is comparable to a massive cultural earthquake and resulting tsunami that rearranges the social landscape. It may well be the most significant social revolution in human history, but there is also a promise. If things can change this fast in one direction, they can change just as fast in another. CRI's special offer of Same-Sex Marriage by Sean McDowell and John Stonestreet, and a special edition of the Christian Research Journal featuring articles on same-sex sexuality and transgender issues from Hank Hanegraaff and Joe Dallas, will help you stand for biblical life and truth. To receive the Same-Sex Marriage book and journal special offer as our thanks for your gift, simply call 888-7000-CRI. And make a gift to support CRI's life-changing outreaches, or simply visit equip.org. As the cost of college education increases, parents and students are asking if the return on investment justifies the expense. Why go to college? What kind of college should one attend? The current issue of the Christian Research Journal helps parents and students wrestle through the options for the post-high school path. Start your subscription to the Christian Research Journal by calling 888-7000-CRI. That's 888-7000-CRI. Or subscribe online at equip.org. Here again is CRI President Hank Hanegraaff.
Thank you, Randy. Quick reminder for those who join the monthly Bible Answer Man support team, be pleased to send you one of my books personalized to you, a family member, or a friend. Those who are occasional givers who become monthly givers end up turbocharging the ministry. We could very much use your regular support for our outreaches, not only through the Bible Answer Man broadcast, the Christian Research Institute, but quite literally our outreaches around the world. You can give in a safe, secure fashion on the web at equip.org, and you can also join the monthly Bible Answer Man support team there. Also, you might want to check out our newsletter on the web, again, equip.org, and you can also get answers to life's toughest questions with my daily e-truth. Each day has its own set of tough questions, and with my daily e-truth, you'll receive the answers you need to strengthen your faith and deepen your understanding of life and truth. In this daily email, I send you clear, concise answers to the most common as well as most difficult questions I've been asked as host of the Bible Answer Man broadcast over almost 30 years now. And I deliver them right to your inbox. Questions dealing with Christianity, modern culture, the world of the cults, the occult, world religions, worldviews, biblical interpretation, and much, much more are answered for you every day of the week. Sometimes it's in the form of short videos, most often in the form of written text. To sign up for your free daily e-truth, go to the web. Again, equip.org/e-truth. That's equip.org/e-truth. I'm going to follow up on the call I had just before the break. I had to almost speed talk to answer the various questions that were being asked, but the premise that the Jehovah's Witnesses might have it right is ill-conceived. Jehovah's Witnesses are most clearly a cult, and a very dangerous one at that. But they believe that there is a little flock of 144,000. They get to go to heaven. And then there's a great crowd. These are others who are relegated to earth. The 144,000 and the great multitude, however, are not two different peoples, as the JW suggest. Instead, they are two different ways of describing the same purified bride. The way it works literally is the 144,000 and the great multitude are comparable to the lion and the lamb. Think about it. John is told about a lion, and then he turns and he sees a lamb. He's told about the 144,000, and he turns to see a great multitude. And therefore, the 144,000 is to the great multitude what the lion is to the lamb, the same entity seen from two different vantage points. From one point, the purified bride is numbered, from the other, innumerable, a great multitude that no one can count. And to suggest, as the JWs do, that 12,000 from each of the 12 tribes means exactly 12,000, not 1199 or 12,001, I think has to stretch the credulity of even the most literalistic Jehovah's Witness beyond their breaking point. Because remember, 10 of the 12 tribes lost their national identity almost 3,000 years ago in the Assyrian exile. The other two, Judah and Benjamin, were largely decimated 2,000 years ago by Roman hordes. And so I think it's far more likely that 144,000 is a number that represents the 12 apostles of the Lamb multiplied by the 12 tribes of Israel times 1,000. In other words, this is a literary construction. 144,000 represent true Israel as it was intended to be in perfect symmetry and providentially sealed. She is the purified bride from every nation, from every tribe, from every people and language that will step over Jordan into the new Jerusalem prepared for her from the foundations of the world. And in that sense, the 144,000 is the limitless great multitude of all those whose names are written in the Lamb's Book of Life and who will inhabit the courts of God for all eternity. God does not scrap things. He redeems things, and that is not only true with respect to our bodies, but also it is true with respect to the universe. This universe will give way to a new one, not altogether other, but sort of like a mother giving birth. A new earth will emerge. The earth that now groans in travail will be liberated from its bondage to decay, and we also ourselves. And that is worth looking for, because we will forever explore God's created handiwork and forever explore the one who saved us by his grace. Let's go back to the phone lines. We'll talk to Sherry in Memphis, Tennessee. Sherry's listening on Bot Radio. Hi.
Hi. I wanted to ask you about the beast in Revelation. And there's the prophet and the Antichrist, and the beast is kind of an enigma, the word to me. And can you tell me about the beast? I know it's supposed to bow before Jesus, but can you tell me about it? It's kind of, I don't really understand.
Sure. And I think that you're wise to make a distinction between Antichrist and the beast in Revelation. Because there are many antichrists. There are no antichrists mentioned by name, or the word antichrist, probably more properly stated, is not used in the book of Revelation. But John uses it in his epistles and says there are many antichrists, and already they have come. What he points out is that anyone who denies that Jesus Christ has come in the flesh is, by virtue of that, anti-Christ or against Christ. Now, certainly that would apply to the beast in Revelation. The beast is a parody of the Lamb, and in that sense, he is an anti-Christ. And what Revelation gives us is the record of the first all-out assault of the beast against the bride. It lasted approximately 3.5 years. Before that time, prior to AD 64, the church was persecuted by the woman who rides the beast. If you want to know who that is, all you have to do is read Scripture in light of Scripture, and you know immediately that this is apostate Israel, those who are seeking to expunge the purified bride from the face of the earth. But shortly after the great fire of Rome, the beast starts unleashing its full fury against a fledgling Christian church. It was back in November AD 64 where the persecutions began in earnest. The malevolent state massacre of Christians instituted by Nero continued for almost 3.5 years without any let-up. In fact, Peter and Paul themselves were persecuted and put to death at the hands of the beast. And this was, and I think this is a very important point, the only epoch in human history in which the beast could directly assail the foundation of the Christian church, of which Christ himself is cornerstone. And only with Nero Caesar's death, which happened in June 9, AD 68, did the carnage against the Bride of Christ finally cease? And not only is there a direct correspondence between the name Nero and the number of his name, but the 42 months he was given to make war against the saints is emblematic of the time period during which the beast wreaked havoc on the bride. And this is, in essence, what the whole of Revelation is about. Seven letters to a purified bride, or to the church. And they're told that they're going to suffer, and that the wheat and the tares are going to grow up together. But if they're faithful, they're going to suffer for a short time. Their vindication is going to be an eternal vindication. But Revelation is also about a prostituted bride. And that prostituted bride, Christ gives very strong warnings to. If they do not turn, they will perish, not only in terms of what happens on earth, but what happens for all eternity. And then in the end, you not only have the persecuted bride and the prostituted bride, but the purified bride carried by the bridegroom over the threshold of Jordan into a new Jerusalem. So Revelation deals with the beast against the lamb. The lamb, obviously, is a reference to Jesus Christ. The beast is a parody of Christ, seeks to take the power and position of Christ, but ultimately in the narrative, the Lamb conquers. For in the end, those who are faithful will live with him for 1,000 years.
Okay.
These things are not simple.
Yeah, it's a lot. It's a lot to take in. Can I ask you one more question?
Sure.
But it says at the end, the people who are in heaven, the Christians will rule with our Jesus in heaven, which will be the New Jerusalem on earth. What does that mean to rule? I mean, what would they rule?
Well, I mean, we you think about this universe as it is right now, and we don't know the extent of the universe, but to get a little glimpse of it on a micro level, if you take a pencil and you make a little dot at the end of a sentence, you have 100 billion atoms of carbon. Just to see one of those atoms, you have to stretch it out the size of a football field. If you look at a macro level, you have 100 billion universes or galaxies with hundreds of billions of stars. We have not exhausted the far reaches of the universe. In eternity, we will rule and reign. We will be victors with Christ. We will have the life that is life to the full. We can live life that is life to the full now, but it is only a reflection of what will be when the image and likeness of humanity is completely restored. And then we will have, using the metaphors given to us by the Apostle Paul, crowns that we throw at the feet of Jesus Christ. So it's metaphorical language saying that we will forever explore a restored universe and forever explore the one who created the universe and forever explore the one who knit us together in our mother's womb. I've written about this in Has God Spoken in Other Places. Be right back.
Recent atheist writers claim to find real physical and psychological harm in Christian teachings and practices. However, careful analysis of this literature reveals numerous methodological flaws, false assumptions, and factual errors. The real question is whether it is the Christian life or the atheist life that best corresponds to reality and provides for genuine human flourishing. The current issue of the Christian Research Journal addresses the question, is Christianity bad for your health? Subscribe today by calling 888-7000-CRI or go online to equip.org. That's equip.org. Stay with us. Hank will be back right after this.
Same-sex marriage is here. It went from unthinkable to legal at a dizzying pace. The question is, now what? Can I attend a same-sex wedding? Can my business provide services for a same-sex union ceremony? What if a person in a gay marriage becomes a Christian? If you haven't encountered these questions yet, stay tuned. Given the current reality shift, you're likely to. Get well-reasoned answers to these and other questions in CRI's Same-Sex Marriage Resource Package, which includes the book Same-Sex Marriage by Sean McDowell and John Stonestreet, and a special edition of the Christian Research Journal featuring articles by Hank Hanegraaff and Joe Dallas. To receive the Same-Sex Marriage Resource Package as our thanks for your gift, simply call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support CRI's life-changing outreaches, or visit equip.org. The Christian Research Journal is CRI's award-winning magazine combining eye-catching design with well-researched articles to equip believers in doctrine, defense, and discernment. Here's what's in the latest issue of the Christian Research Journal. The seven deadly sins are vices that undermine loving God and loving others. The virtuous life, by contrast, is one that resembles the image of the truest human, Jesus. Character cultivation begins not with moralistic endeavor, but with a relationship with God and Christ, which in turn transforms our character. Other topics include, is Christianity bad for your health? Why we lost the culture war and how to make a comeback? Morality, therefore God, an evangelistic strategy, and much more. Start your subscription to the Christian Research Journal today by calling 888-7000-CRI. Or subscribe online at equip.org. Richard Dawkins' grasp of philosophical arguments wouldn't earn him a passing grade in a freshman philosophy course, but he doesn't mean to deal with the questions that theists are asking. He simply ridicules his opponent's position. In New Atheism, a Survival Guide, Graham Veal explains, the new atheist stance is that the reasons for theism must be so bad, why even read about them? My goodness, no, you just dismiss them. Veal goes on to show that the new atheists have not offered one original argument for atheism, but they've plenty of original insults. New Atheism offers an accessible, practical resource for countering new atheist attacks. To receive your copy of New Atheism, a Survival Guide, as our thank you gift, simply call 888-7000-CRI. And make a gift to support CRI's life-changing outreaches, or visit equip.org. The soul and relationship-destroying seven deadly sins are vices that undermine loving God and loving others. The virtuous life, by contrast, is one that resembles the image of the truest human, Jesus. Character cultivation begins not with moralistic behavior, but with a relationship with God and Christ, which in turn transforms our character. Find the path to virtuous character in the latest edition of the Christian Research Journal. Start your subscription today by calling 888-7000-CRI. That's 888-7000-CRI. Or subscribe online at equip.org. Once again, here's Bible Answer Man host, Hank Hanegraaff.
Thank you very much, Randy. Let's go right back to our phone callers. Next up is David. He's listening in Sumter, South Carolina, listening on the web. Hi, David. Hello, David. Let's go to Sharon. She's listening in St. Louis, Missouri. Hi, Sharon.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. My question is, first of all, just want to say thank you for the time and effort and your entire team working to answer our most difficult questions. So to get to my question, I was just wondering, when a person wins the lottery or a game show or win prizes through a drawing or anything like that, is it based upon probability and statistics, or is there divine intervention?
Well, you know, I think there's a more basic question, and that is, do you really want to glorify chance? Do you really want to rely on luck rather than the providence of God? Because when you do, you disregard Christian stewardship principles, and what you end up doing is profiting at someone else's expense. I mean, you think about what happens with the lottery. A lot of people who have very little resource are giving their money away in hopes of a pot of gold at the end of the rainbow. The chances of them winning the lottery are less than their chances of being struck by lightning. And so what you're doing is glorifying chance. You're bilking the poor. It's a tax on the poor, in essence. It's voluntary, but that's what it amounts to. And so, yeah, I mean, those who are working hard and not taking unnecessary risks are benefiting those who are hoping that they're going to be struck by lightning are not benefiting. They're losing in the big scheme of things. So, you know, I think that it appeals to human greed, and it can be extraordinarily addictive. Didn't happen this week, but maybe next week. Didn't happen today, maybe tomorrow. And so you get into this daily grind of hoping that you win the lotto and you, in the end, glorify chance.
Okay, and I understand, I appreciate your response to that, but there are winners. Are those winners by divine intervention or by chance?
Well, I think that God has a hand in everything that happens in the universe. And chance is often made to be the magic wand that pulls not only rabbits but whole universes into existence. So, you know, the whole idea of chance certainly has been glorified. And you're right, there are winners, but the point is winning in that way actually winning at all? Solomon, and he was the wisest man who ever lived, makes a point about money and money. And basically, just like knowing are not the same, there are two kinds of knowing. So Solomon says there are two kinds of money. Money that is earned by diligent, disciplined work and labor is money that has longevity, money that comes into existence by chance, oftentimes ruins the person who is the recipient. That's what the wisest man who ever lived says. So I think I would put a whole lot of stock into that.
Great. Thank you. I appreciate that.
You got it. And this is like hitting the lotto. I have a Sharon from St. Louis, Missouri, and a Sharon from St. Louis, Missouri. A different one. Hi.
Oh, hi. This is Sharon.
It's amazing. Two Sharons, both from St. Louis, both listening on Bot Radio.
Hello?
Hi.
Hi, this is Sharon from St. Louis. And the question that I have is, are you going to be able to recognize people in heaven, like my mother and sister and a couple brothers who passed on? And if you can, how can you be, like, totally happy if some of them do not make it?
Well, a couple things. First of all, yes, you're not going to have less knowledge. You're going to have more knowledge. So we will recognize people. We're not going to look exactly like we look right now. It's very much like the metamorphosis of a caterpillar. The change is quite dramatic. The caterpillar crawls around on a branch. The caterpillar that goes into the chrysalis then dissolves into a muddy, mysterious mixture, and out of that comes a butterfly. And the butterfly is so different. It has eyes that can do a whole lot more than distinguish between light and dark. It has a field of vision and color acuity that exceeds even that of a human being. Now, on top of that, the butterfly can fly. On top of that, it has a proboscis that can suck the nectar out of a flower. So there are many changes that take place. There's a one-to-one correspondence between the two, but they're not identical. In the same way, when we're resurrected, there's a correspondence between the body that was and the body that will be, but they're certainly not identical. But we will be able to recognize one another on the basis of many other factors. I mean, the only way that you know a person is not through physical appearance. So we'll be physical, but we'll also have a metaphysical reality, and we will have, as I said, not less knowledge, but more knowledge in the eternal state. In terms of how we're going to feel, we can't really quantify that now. And the reason is because we will be looking at things from a completely different perspective in the new heavens and the new earth. Why? Because then we're going to see things as they really are. And we're going to see that God is absolutely just and righteous in absolutely every single way. Which is to say that if you were in a courtroom and you knew about something that took place, and you saw that the judgment of the judge takes into consideration every converging factor, you end up pretty happy, not sad, because you see that the judge of the universe has done right. If an earthly judge does right and you're happy, how much more so when the judge of the universe makes righteous judgments? The other thing that's important to recognize is those who are in hell because that is precisely what they want. They don't want a relationship with the Lord, and so the Lord gives them what they want. He gives them the separation that they're looking for. He doesn't cause them to cease to exist. He doesn't rub out the crowning jewels of his creation, but what he does is he continues to sustain them, but in the condition that they're asking for. They don't want his glory. They don't want his grace. They don't want a relationship with him, and God does not force them into his loving presence.
Okay. I just can't imagine myself being happy, like, without my family up there, but
well,
hopefully they all go.
Right, but you know, heaven wouldn't be heaven. Heaven would be hell if the unrighteous were dragged into heaven against their will, right? Imagine a person in this life. They don't want anything to do with Jesus Christ. Think of a Richard Dawkins or Christopher Hitchens. They don't want a relationship with Jesus Christ. Christopher Hitchens, he was virtually on his deathbed, very, very close to death. And he said, if anybody tells you that I had a deathbed conversion, tell them it's not true. I don't want anything to do with God. In essence, he said, I hate God. Now, God is not going to take Christopher Hitchens, he dies, and says, you know what, Christopher, I'm God, you're Christopher, and I'm going to now drag you into my presence for all eternity. You hate me, but I'm going to force you into my loving presence. No, God doesn't do that. God gives him precisely what he wants, separation. He wanted that in this life, and God will give that to him in the life to come. So the worst thing would be if God would be, as it were, a cosmic rapist forcing himself on Christopher Hitchens against his will. What God does is give him precisely the situation that he has longed for, distance and separation from the goodness and the glory and the grace of God.
Okay, can I ask you one other question?
Sure. Yep.
My brother, who has passed on, was a racist. I mean, I know he went to church, he loved God, but he was a racist. And I worry about that, you know, because of that, he might not be in heaven. What are your feelings on that?
Well, I'm not the judge of the universe, you know, and again, this is the thing that in eternity, God will take every converging factor into consideration. Yeah, it's not the absence of knowledge that damns, it's the despising of knowledge that damns. I cannot conceive of someone hating other people because of the color of their skin and yet being a follower of Jesus Christ, but then I'm not God. God has a way of looking at our blemishes in the perspective of our total understanding of things as they are. The big thing for someone who really loves the Lord, as you say your brother did, the big thing is, did he want to be a participant in the kingdom? If he wanted to be a participant in the kingdom, then what he inevitably would do is conform his pattern of living to the precepts and principles of Christ. Now, maybe he didn't understand them fully, but if his desire was to do it Christ's way, I don't know what's going to happen in eternity. I mean, this is a question I can't answer, but I can tell you this, that the judge of the universe will answer that question with absolute precision, with absolute grace, with absolute justice, and with absolute love, the whole package. In other words, this is the righteous judge, and we will love his righteousness even as we love him now.
Okay. Appreciate you.
I'm going to end the show. We only have 52 seconds. I think of C.S. Lewis, who said that he would pay any price to be able to say truthfully, everyone would be saved. But my reason retorts, said Lewis, without their will or with it. If I say without their will, at once perceive a contradiction. How can the supreme voluntary act of self-surrender be involuntary? If I say with their will, my reason replies, how, if they don't give in? And then he went on to say, ultimately, there are only two kinds of people in the world, those who say to God, thy will be done, and those to whom God says in the end, thy will be done. One somber reason we're called to be ambassadors for Christ, being light in a lost and searching world. Be right back here tomorrow.
We appreciate you tuning in to the Bible Answer Man broadcast. Before we sign off today, here's our contact information. By phone, dial 888-7000-CRI, which translates to 888-7000-274. On the internet, go to equip.org. That's equip.org. You can also write CRI at Post Office Box 8500, Charlotte, North Carolina. The zip code is 28271. Our prayer is that today's broadcast has equipped you to better defend your faith and encouraged you to pursue sound doctrine and godly living. Thank you for listening. The Bible Answer Man broadcast is supported solely by listeners like you. We're on the air because life and truth matter. The fast-growing acceptance of same-sex marriage is comparable to a massive cultural earthquake and resulting tsunami that rearranges the social landscape. It may well be the most significant social revolution in human history, but there is also a promise. If things can change this fast in one direction, they can change just as fast in another. CRI's special offer of Same-Sex Marriage by Sean McDowell and John Stonestreet, and a special edition of the Christian Research Journal featuring articles on same-sex sexuality and transgender issues from Hank Hanegraaff and Joe Dallas, will help you stand for biblical life and truth. To receive the Same-Sex Marriage book and journal special offer as our thanks for your gift, simply call 888-7000-CRI. And make a gift to support CRI's life-changing outreaches, or simply visit equip.org. The Christian Research Journal is CRI's award-winning magazine, combining eye-catching design with well-researched articles to equip believers in doctrine, defense, and discernment. Here's what's in the latest issue of the Christian Research Journal. Recent atheist writers claim to find real physical and psychological harm in Christian teachings and practices. However, careful analysis of this literature reveals numerous flaws, false assumptions, and factual errors. The real question is whether it is the Christian life or the atheist life that best corresponds to reality and provides for genuine human flourishing. Other topics include the seven deadly sins and the path to virtuous character. Does the Levitical prohibition of homosexuality still apply today? And much more. Start your subscription to the Christian Research Journal today by calling 888-7000-CRI or subscribe online at equip.org.